Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight is Trina Robbins. She produced the very first all-women comic book in 1970, and she's been one of the founding mothers of women's comics. And she's a historian of women's roles in comics. Her autobiography, Last Girl Standing, was published in 2017. And we're here talking about her latest comic collection. It's very unique. A Minyan Yidden, Un Ander Zaken. I'm going to have her correct my pronunciation of that. It's translated as A Bunch of Jews and Other Stuff. Trina, welcome back to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you again.
Thank you so much.
Now, before we start, I want you to pronounce the title of this book because my Yiddish is horrible.
A Minyan Yidden.
And the subtitle?
Un Ander Zaken.
That's not bad. That sounds...
No, not bad at all.
And that translates as A Bunch of Jews...
And other stuff.
The story of this comic is absolutely phenomenal, and it's based on stories written by your father, Max B. Perelson.
That's right.
Talk to me about your childhood and Yiddish and your family and how you felt about it.
Well, I have to say that growing up in Queens in a neighborhood that was Irish and Italian Catholic, I really didn't like being Jewish. I felt like an outsider. I hated it on Easter when all the other girls would get all dressed up and go to church. And I wanted to be what I considered American. And being Jewish to me was not American.
Oh my God.
So I was a dreadful daughter. I mean, I was a good, I take it back. I wasn't a little juvenile delinquent or anything. And I did love my parents, and I knew they loved me. But I just totally disassociated myself with anything Jewish. I wanted to belong. And for me, being Jewish was not belonging.
And your father had written this book. Now, talk to me about it. Did you know that he had written this book when you were a kid?
I knew he had written a book, but I ignored it. I didn't want anything to do with it. I didn't care because it was in Yiddish. Did
you speak Yiddish as a kid? Was Yiddish spoken in the household?
My parents spoke Yiddish to each other when they were saying things they didn't want the kids to understand.
I know that feeling. I think that's the truth for a lot of people who've come
from
different countries. And so that's another reason why you probably like, I don't want to have anything to do with that language. They're hiding stuff from me.
Uh-huh.
So
now, of course, I am actually taking Yiddish classes.
Great. But tell me where your father grew up.
He grew up in a little village called Duboy in what is now Belarus. And that's what the stories are about. I mean, I would say about 75% of the stories in the book are almost like little snapshots of the people he left behind in his village when he came to America at the age of 16.
Now, are these true stories?
They are true stories. They are real people. I know some of them are dreadful and some of them are idiots, but that's the whole point.
And he got into trouble for writing the book, too. There were people who immigrated with him who didn't appreciate the fact that he wrote this book.
Yes. My father belonged to a group of young men, well, once they had been young anyway, who all came from the same small town. And they called their group the Duboyer Young Men's Progressive Association.
Wow.
Nice name. But he was writing about their uncles and cousins and relatives. And it was not flattering. So there was a point at which he didn't dare go to meetings. They had it in for him.
Wow. Now, he also wrote for Yiddish language newspapers.
He did. He did. In those days, when my father, you know, was young, living in the Lower East Side in New York, there were tons of Yiddish language newspapers. I can think of three right now. There was the Forward, the Tug, and the Freiheit. But I believe there were even more.
What did your father write for those newspapers? Do you know?
You know, I still have to track down, see if there are any archives, and I can find what he wrote for them because I have no idea.
Now, we should say a word about the language Yiddish because some people may not have heard about Yiddish. Where did the language originate?
Oh, God, it's kind of a mixture. Some people think that it's a form of German, but it's much more. And if you were to tell my Yiddish teacher that it's a form of German, he would get furious. it comes from a mixture of all the places, really, that the Jews lived, starting in the Middle East and, you know, going on to Italy, France, Spain, Poland, Russia, and Germany.
Now, it's what's amazing is you mentioned about all the Yiddish newspapers. Do they still exist today?
The Forward is the only one that still exists.
Because there were Yiddish comics, there were Yiddish everything, entertainment.
Yes, there was the Yiddish theater.
Yep.
Definitely. And a lot of the early comedians were, you know, people like, now that I said early Yiddish comedians, I can't think of them, but there were tons, and they all started like in places in the Borscht Belt, which is in the mountains in the upstate New York, where all the Jews would go for vacation, and that's where they started their careers.
So your father wrote this book, and you paid no attention to it.
That's right.
How did you finally reconnect with the book?
Well, you know, I thought that the book itself was just a lost object, that it would never be found again, because it's how obscure can you get, right? A book written in Yiddish in 1938. But my daughter, who is a much better daughter than I was, found it on the Internet. It had actually been reprinted, print on demand by Abe Books, and I bought it, and I had it translated, and voila.
Wow. Were you amazed when you first sat down and wrote it? Read it?
Reading it. God, it was like, oh, my God, he was a good writer. He had a good sense of humor. Well, I always knew he had a sense of humor. But it was like, oh, wow, this guy can write.
Now, you decide that, and being Trina Robbins, you decided that you were going to turn these into a comic? Talk to me about that process. I mean, that's a
big... Well, it just seemed like a natural reading it. I just felt... Oh, this is meant to be turned into a comic. It's perfect. So I did.
Okay. It sounds easy when you say, so I did, but that has to have been a process. How did you go about this? I mean, how did you raise money for the project? How did the whole thing happen?
Well, I made up a wish list, first of all, of artists.
And I know one of them was Marc Chagall.
That's right. I wanted Marc Chagall for the cover, but he was not available.
Too bad.
So I got Willie Mendez, who... There was a time when Willie and I were the only two women in San Francisco drawing comics, and she has moved on. She is now a serious artist, although serious, I don't know. Her work is just as, her paintings, which are huge, are just as vibrant as the comics she drew, actually. And I knew she'd be perfect. She has a gallery in Los Angeles, and so she did the cover. Of course, I couldn't get Marc Chagall. I also, among the artists I wanted, I very much wanted Will Eisner, but alas, he was also not available.
That's right. You got a lot of people that are fairly famous, people like Sherry Flanagan and stuff like that. Did you just go and ask them?
Say it again?
Did you just go and ask these people?
Yes, I went and asked these people.
Wow.
And most of them said yes. Some of them said they would love to do it, but they had too many other commitments, and I can understand that. And of the people I asked, as a matter of fact, one guy drew one perfect, I won't name him, but he drew one perfect page, and then he disappeared off the face of the earth, and I still don't know where he is.
Uh-oh. Now, are these all the stories from the books, or are there other
stories? No. I picked the ones that adapted into comic form best.
Okay, now did you assign the story to the artist or did you get the
choice? No, I asked the artists to pick a story. I sent them the entire adaptation and asked them to pick a story.
And when you read this, now this is life in a little shtetl. It's a little rural community in Belarus, what is now Belarus.
In fact, it's a terrible little place. I mean, at one point he describes it as my dear muddy Dubois. You know, you can imagine.
Well, you talk about a town in Yiddish literature called Kelm.
Talk
to me about that, because that's not real. That's not a real place. That's like
no, it's a mythic place. And it's the subject of many jokes of much Jewish humor. this mystic and mythic town called Chelm, where everyone is really very stupid. I mean, it's an entire town populated by dimwits. And, you know, there's lots of jokes around it. And so many times when reading my father's stories, I felt, oh, my God, this is Chelm all over again.
Now, in all fairness to your father's stories, though, there are people who are fairly smart, but they might be a little it's funny. They're types. They're people like – I know people like some of the people in these stories. Like there's a story, the one that's illustrated by Sherry Flanagan, by Yosel Meyer.
Oh, yeah.
I know that guy.
Yeah, anything that you say, he's going to say, oh, yes, and mine was better. Mine was bigger. Oh, I remember.
That's like, first of all, let's tell the whole story of Yosel Meyer. He like, okay, so he grew up in this tiny Dubois, but he traveled once to like,
yes,
where did he travel
to? The Tsar's army. He was conscripted, poor little guy, and wound up, you know, in a train to, God, I don't have the book in front of me, so I don't exactly remember where.
Was it in the Caucasus?
And after they finally let him out of the army, he works for a while, I think, in Bialystok, making seltzer, working in a seltzer factory. And then he comes home, and as far as he's concerned, he's traveled the world. So, like, nobody can say anything that isn't bested by him, you know?
I love these conversations he has in the book. Somebody, like, from a completely other part of the world will talk about something that's from their hometown, and he'll go, yes, I know exactly what that is, because I did. And the book is filled with this book is filled with stories like that. Now, it has also got a recipe in it.
Yes, yes. Okay, I have to say that's not my father's recipe. I looked it up on the internet.
Have you made it? Have you?
No, I have not. But it looks like it would make quite nicely.
Now, how do you pronounce that? Is it
Kotletten.
Now, kotletten, describe...
And they're not cutlets. When we think of cutlets, we think of like a certain kind of slice of meat that is breaded and fried. They're not cutlets. They're more like a very fancy kind of meatball, except it's flattened and it looks like a pancake.
And the story,
or like a potato pancake.
The story is just about this boy who just dreams.
You know, that one just totally blew my mind because it's about my father. He's telling the story of when he was getting ready to leave for America and getting his eyes examined and, you know, going to Pinsk, the big city. And I had never ever, because I was such a dreadful daughter, I never really asked him to tell me about life in the old country. So here he is telling me. It's wonderful.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. And he just longs for these kotlettens. He more than anything,
they're made with meat, and they were so poor they could barely afford meat.
They never had them in the house. They never ever had.
His mother was always making potato pancakes.
And no matter where he went in the world, that's what he just dreamt of.
Yes.
This kotletten. But then you found this recipe.
I did.
And I feel like I need to make it after reading it. It looks delicious.
Please, if you make it before I do, tell me how it is.
It's got to be great. It's got to be great. It's made with schmaltz.
Mm-hmm.
Now, schmaltz is like fat, right?
Chicken fat. Schmaltz is chicken fat.
Wow. I have to – it sounds – when I read this, I just sounded like, man, I need this. And then I'm going to dream of kotletten from now until then.
I'm sure you can find chicken fat in some stores.
Oh, I'm sure you can.
Specialty stores.
You're listening to WISN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight is Trina Robbins. She produced the very first all-women comic book back in 1970 and was one of the founding mothers of women's comics. She's a historian of women's roles in comics, and her memoir, Last Girl Standing, was published in 2017. And by the way, I really recommend that book. But we're talking about her latest I'm glad you pronounced it. Which translates a bunch of Jews and other stuff based on stories written by her father. I think this is such a wonderful project to have done. Do you have other members of your family living that remembered your father?
No, sorry. Actually, no, I have a cousin who I never really asked her if she remembered. She's a little bit younger than me, so if anybody did remember, it would be her. But then I also, one of the stories in the book started by saying that it was dedicated to Chaim Kuznets.
I love that story. That story is, I will no longer write free verse.
Yes, I love it too. I love it too. And the artist did a great job on it. It was perfect. But Chaim Kuznets, I said, I know that name. I know that name. So I asked my older sister, who remembers much more than me, and she said, oh yeah, that was Daddy's literary friend. They would get together and, you know, talk literary talk. And he also, it turned out, wrote for the Forward. He wrote the crossword puzzle in Yiddish.
Wow.
And so I found his daughters, and they remembered my father. They had been quite young, of course, but remembered my father.
Let's talk about that story, because the story is him relating the story that he was passionate about freedom, and he loved...
I'm sure that, you know, this probably stemmed from a conversation they had about free verse.
Now, when he's talking about free verse, he's talking about taking somebody else's written works, ripping up strips of it, and then putting it down sort of in random order and then reading it as random verse. That's a practice that goes back to the early part of the 1900s. I mean, the Dadaists used to do it. All sorts of people used to do it.
I'm not surprised. And then everyone loved it.
Except that
the ripped up pieces of paper came back to haunt him. And attack him.
The look of ripped up pieces of paper coming back to haunt him in his bed is hilarious. That's worth the price of admission just for this book alone to see that. That's an amazing story. And because of that, he will never write free verse again.
Right.
I love it. Is there going to be a second volume, do you think?
No. I did all the best ones. I did all the ones that are best adapted to comic form.
Some of these look like they should be animated. Like there's a... The last story, I think it's called Even Goats Love Flowers.
Oh, yes.
That would make a perfect animation.
You're right, it would. It would make a lovely little short, animated short.
It really would. And it's a wonderful story, too. It's a wonder about everybody putting their flowers out in the rains and the goats eat them all, and therefore goats love flowers, and they have a sense
of
this.
And the artist, Miriam Caton, who is a wonderful, wonderful artist, who has done several graphic novels, also worked in animation.
She did.
That didn't even occur to me.
Because her work looks like it's storyboarded animation.
No surprise.
Now, there's also some adult stories in here, too. There's Longing, and that's a really fascinating story about lust in the heart.
Robert Tripto, the artist, did such a beautiful job on it.
And it features the song Inka Dinka Doo.
Yes! I wanted a silly... I mean, in the book, my father does not name the song. He just says a silly popular song. And so I looked up what was popular in 1931, and Inka Dinka Doo was like, at some point, top of the charts.
It's about a married man who has been long married. The sort of physical aspect of his relationship has gone out the window, and he starts longing for this woman who comes and visits his wife. And it's really a fascinating story. That seems like that could have been a short film made out of that too. That's a really beautiful story.
It could.
So is the tone overall of your father's stories humorous, or are they sort of vary between serious and humorous?
I think that it's mostly humorous. You're right that Longing is not. But Longing is very sweet, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's bittersweet.
Bittersweet, yes.
Now,
most of them are funny, especially the Du Bois ones.
Oh, my God.
They're all about these either brainless people or terrible people.
Terrible people who think an awful lot of themselves.
Oh, yes.
Now, how did you get this published?
Ah, Hope Nicholson.
Who I just interviewed like a couple of months ago.
Did you?
Didn't she?
She's wonderful.
She did a history of women superheroes.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Very good book, that one.
It is.
She's Canadian-based. She's done a number of books. I met her in, I believe, 2014 at the Toronto Comics Arts Festival, and I wrote the introduction to a couple of her books, and we got along like a house on fire. She's a fabulous person.
Yes, she is.
She wears vintage clothes and bright red lipstick. And,
wow.
You know, you get the picture. She's just great.
And
I told her about this story, and she said she'd like to publish it, about this book. Amazing. What a wonderful woman.
That whole press that she heads up, which is Bedside Press, is really wonderful.
I contributed to her Secret Loves of Geek Girls. I wrote the introduction and a small piece in there on why I know that my boyfriend is really a superhero.
She also introduced me to one of the first female superheroes who's Canadian. I'd never heard of her before.
Novana of the Northern Light.
Oh, my God. Is that a great comic or what?
Yes, and even the name. I mean, what a great name. Novana of the Northern Lights.
Oh, my God.
I love it.
And she's republishing a lot of old comics, and there's a nice volume on Nelvana, which is just beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're down to the last few minutes, but we hadn't even talked when I interviewed you last. It was about Last Girl Standing. I didn't even get a chance to talk to you about your life in comics. It was all your life before the comics, and then we ran out of time. I wanted to talk to you about starting that first all-women's comics. People don't realize back in the late 60s and 70s how sexist the head comics, the alternative comics were at the time. And you're one of the few people that picked up on it about the violence towards women, about other things. And you write about that in Last Girl Standing. It was amazing to read that.
Nobody noticed. It's really weird.
They noticed, but they didn't say anything.
They noticed and they didn't say anything. They didn't even think it was... I mean, terms like rape culture didn't exist in those days. Even the word sexist did not exist yet in those days. And people just... They didn't notice, and they didn't object. And I objected, so of course I was told that I had no sense of humor.
And so the way that you dealt with that was to start your own comic.
Of course.
I love that. What was this first all-women's comic called?
It was called It Ain't Me, Babe.
And I own one of the original copies, I'll have you know.
Bravo for you.
I bought it on the stand, and I was like, that was an eye-opener to me.
Oh, good for you. And you kept it?
Kept it.
Good for you.
I have it filed away. But talk to me about getting the artists. Were there many other women artists at that time who were basically
wearing... There was only one other woman drawing comics in San Francisco, and that was Willie Mendez, who went on to draw, who became a fine artist and went on to draw the cover for A Minion Yidden. All the others were women I knew who could draw. So I simply said, would you like to draw a comic? And they were like, well, sure.
And was there a lot of blowback by the male artists?
No, really, there wasn't. I think that mostly they ignored it, as they ignored everything by women.
That's worse. That's
yes.
I actually think that's worse. So then you started, you were one of the people that founded Women's Comics, spelled WIMMINS. And that became a series.
I was one of the founding mothers. Yes.
Now, that's a series that went on for a long period of time.
It lasted for 20 years, from 1972 to 1992.
Jesus. That's amazing to have been part of that. Do you feel like you've gotten the credit for what you did for women in comics?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I'm getting credit these days. I mean, I went a long time without credit.
Oh, no.
And suddenly... Maybe it's because I'm still alive. I don't know. But suddenly everyone's taking notice of me. It's nice.
It would have been nice if it was when you were younger, when you could have done something with it.
But, you know, even in those days, I would get the occasional letter, you know, from guys. I remember once, about 1971, getting a letter from a guy who said, I really like your comics, and my old lady hates underground comics, but yours are the only ones she'll read. And that was great. That was great.
They were for me at that time. They were coming from a totally different place and a perspective that was different. And I really liked that. And the styles were very different, too. And the focus was all completely different. Although there was a lot of biting satire in the comics, too, which was great. And I love that. But
thank you. I'm glad to know.
It is amazing. And so here you are. Are you still doing comics ever?
I write comics, obviously.
Do you write Honey West?
I did.
I saw that in Last Girl Standing, but I never knew that you did that.
And she was such a great character. She was the first woman private eye on television in 1965 and 66. And she was played by Anne Francis, who was perfect, absolutely perfect. You can't think of Honey West without seeing Anne Francis in your mind.
Anne Francis was the only woman in the movie Forbidden Planet, too, wasn't she?
That's right. Isn't she great in that?
She's great. And because she's the only woman, she has to really hold up a lot.
That's right.
And she's really independent and different in that movie. And she's great. And so talk to me about Honey West Comics. You just sort of continued the
story? Well,
stories?
You know, when it was on TV, I loved it. That was even before Emma Peel. And,
that's right.
You know, in her white cat suit, which came a little bit later. But I always, you know, anything with a woman heroine,
that's right.
You know, it was so rare that I just loved it. And then when I did the comics, I decided that since it took place in 65 and 66, all of my stories would be retro. So that was so much fun.
Did you get to put some of your...
Then you research around what happened in 1966,
that's right.
What happened in 65.
I love that.
And I even went a little earlier, like to 64, you know, and I really enjoyed doing that because part of the fun is research.
I
love research.
Did you get to stick some of your fashions in there?
No, because she's conservative. She's a conservative dresser.
Okay, that's right. Your fashions were really out there.
Mm-hmm.
We're out of time, and it's been a distinct pleasure. My returning guest tonight has been Trina Robbins. She produced the very first all-women's comic book in 1970. She's one of the founding mothers of women's comics. She's a historian of women's role in comics, too, and... her memoir, which is a great read, Last Girl Standing, was published in 2017. That's one of my favorite books of the year.
And thank you so much.
And we've been talking about her latest comic collection. I'm going to screw up the pronunciation, but I'm going to say it anyways. Actually, why don't you say it? It's
Minyan Yidden und andere Sachen.
A bunch of Jews and other stuff. It's a wonderful collection of stories. Trina, it's been a real pleasure. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.